This is Central Time, and now it's time for Food Friday. This weekend is the beginning of the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah. That holiday comes with some traditional foods associated with it. Deb Perlman joins us now to share her takes on some of those dishes. By the way, some of these are going to be really good any time of the year. Deb is the creator and the author of the cooking blog Smitten Kitchen, and her books include Smitten Kitchen Every Day. Deb, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, can you talk first of all, Deb, about the importance of food as part of this celebration of Rosh Hashanah?
There is always food at Jewish celebrations, I guess, except for specific fasting days throughout the year, which also have their own foods at the end of it that you're supposed to eat. So there's really very few Jewish holidays that don't have food involved. But in Rosh Hashanah, which begins tonight, it actually goes for two nights. We usually eat. There are certain foods that are more traditional. One of the big ones is apples and honey. They're always eaten together to make for a sweet new year. And I love how seasonal it is. It feels very September. Often there's challah served, and it's a brown challah instead of like the longer one that you might have for a Friday night, Shabbat. And the round challah is supposed to symbolize a crown. And then there's just more, which are not necessarily part of the religious part of it, but it's very traditional to have something like a brisket, which is like a long braised, piece of meat that is just, it's very good if you use the right recipe, but I think a lot of us have bad brisket memories.
Do you have any favorite is there one that stands out to you in terms of nostalgia?
There's definitely one. So I was somebody who thought I didn't really care for brisket, mostly because I don't think we cooked it that much growing up, and then the ones I'd had elsewhere. So we're not going to insult my mom here. This is very important.
Good.
But the ones we'd had elsewhere were, a little dry and heavy. And then I met my mother-in-law, and her brisket is just perfect every time. And her secret is that she likes to use a slow cooker, or nowadays I'm sure she would use the Instapot too, but she still has her slow cooker. So she uses a slow cooker, and it gives it a very gentle heat and a long cooking time. And she always says that you should make it a full day before you need it, because it tastes great after resting in the fridge. It's really better on like the second and third day. So following her rules, I started making brisket, and it was awesome.
Sounds really good. Well, let's talk brisket a little bit. And this is getting big, the hipsters, they're loving the brisket these days. It's hard, more and more places seem to be serving brisket. It's not something I grew up with it. So it's all kind of new to me. You just gave us some of the tips there, the slow cooking or the Instapot or whatever. We've got a recipe you shared with us for a tangy spiced brisket. First of all, tell us about the end result that makes the work, the advanced prep worthwhile. What are we going to get at the end?
You're going to get a perfect piece of meat that reheats really well and is super tender. I think one of the secrets is another one of the things is you want to have a bit of liquid. You don't want so much that you're boiling the meat. I mean, that doesn't sound very appealing. But with a braise where you're having, quite a bit and you're keeping it moist. I know we hate that word. But you're keeping it moist the whole time you cook it, and you keep the lid on or foil on tight. And this, if you're doing it in the oven. And this slow cooking is really good for it. Brisket, it's interesting you say it's getting popular. I was not aware, but I'm also not cool. So this is not surprising that I've missed a trend. I think it's a very inexpensive, versatile piece of meat. And so you have to know how to cook it. But if you do, it's amazing. It's not, it's not as easy of a win as just like throwing it on a grill. Although you could smoke it for a very long time, and that would also be delicious.
Well, to clear up any misconceptions out there, Deb, I am not cool either. And I admit I have never made brisket myself. If I'm at the meat counter, the butcher, whatever, do I ask for brisket, or is there a different name for the cut of meat that I turn into brisket? I don't even know.
I think you can, in America, you can definitely ask for brisket.
Just ask for brisket.
Ordering in the UK, there's some like definite, I definitely expect them to know what brisket is. And it's usually just like a big old, it usually comes in like anywhere from like a 3 to a 10 pound piece, so you might end up with quite a bit. But as I said, it's really great in advance. I also, in the Jewish holiday off season, I love to make tacos with it. I feel like it's such a nice like braise for taco meat, and it shreds up really nicely.
Yeah, talk about the saucy sauce here and why it's important for our brisket.
So I think most traditional recipes tend to have a bit of sugar and salt and acidity in them. You often have like a kind of sweet and sour vibe, not too heavy on the sweet, but usually there's a blend. You might have onions, you might have carrots, you might have garlic, but it's just sort of that this traditional flavor. And something I had fun with this year and is using the same kind of braise, which doesn't have meat in it, and to use it to cook some vegetables like chickpeas. And I also added carrots and mushrooms. And it's such a delicious way to cook chickpeas. It's this, I also braise it. You don't have to braise it for as many hours as you would a brisket. For the chickpeas, you're just going to do it for an hour and a half in the oven. But you end up with this really like meaty, filling, hearty vegetable dish that's actually vegan, which is really great if you are either yourself trying to eat less meat or if you have family members that don't eat meat.
We're talking to Deb Perlman, creator of the food blog Smitten Kitchen. It's the first day of the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah. Deb's giving us some takes on typical foods that accompany that celebration. Got that brisket recipe at WPR.org/Food Friday. Also a link to Deb's blog where she's got that chickpea brisket equivalent a recipe. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you celebrating the Jewish New Year this weekend? If so, what is on the menu and when can I come by? Have you tried any of Deb's recipes that she's talking about? Do you have questions for making the challah bread, the brisket, the honey or apple cake? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. Coming up, President Trump says he wants to see more positive messages about American history in the educational system. A Wisconsin historian joins the show for a look at the role of history education and whether we should learn the good parts version or the warts and all version. That's coming up right now. It's the WPR fall membership drive. Judith Sears Poisson is with me now to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support your future Wisconsin Public Radio listening.
Listener support makes up the largest piece of the funding for the programs you count on, like Central Time. So that's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
And we've got a goal of 15 contributions this hour, which I think we could do. Especially if am I reading this right? We've got 12 already. That doesn't even seem possible.
Yes, it's
12
possible.
Already. That is fantastic. Well, three more gets us to our goal. I would love it if this is our first day of the pledge drive here on the Ideas Network, the membership drive, and it would be great if we could just exceed and blow past that goal. Make your gift. I personally love hitting these goals. That's not why you give, though. You don't care about the goal. You care about the conversations you get every day on the Ideas Network. Support those right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, that was such a fun conversation with Deb Perlman. We love to talk with her. I love her recipes. I love her approach to cooking. And I really love that she shares recipes with us that then we can go back and try them. And I have to say, everything she talked about today sounded so great. If you enjoy Food Friday, if you enjoy guests like Deb Perlman and learning techniques, tips, tricks, recipes, how to use different ingredients, show your support right now. Food Friday is a great staple, pun intended, of Central Time. And we'd love to see you vote in favor of Food Friday with your gift right now. These are the kind of conversations you can count on from Central Time.
You can give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. My favorite part of Food Friday, Judith, is when you're so inspired to make these meals that you have extra and you just drop them off on my front porch in the evening.
Has that ever really happened, Rob?
No, but it could. That doesn't mean it could never
well,
happen.
Well, I got to say, if either of us makes a brisket, it sounds like there are going to be leftovers.
There's
so going to
be leftovers. That's a good point. Let's
make a brisket promise to each other. How's that?
A brisket pledge.
Actually,
yeah, we can't really ask you, the listener, for that brisket pledge, though. But how about this? If you have been inspired to make something by Food Friday or learned a good technique or a trick or ingredient, I know I have lots and lots and lots
Me
of
too.
Them. Make a gift in honor of that, in honor of what you've learned, how it's boosted your cooking game. If you're like me, it certainly has. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So we have a lot of fun doing things like Food Friday, learning all those great recipes, but we also do other things. And you might have noticed the upcoming election has been in the news quite a bit this year, and it's going to be for the next couple months. No matter what the issues are, the economy, national security, immigration, healthcare, you'll hear about them here on the Ideas Network.
WPR is your source for comprehensive reporting on election issues, and your support is the biggest source of funding that makes election news on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. So make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
John and Kirsty in Highland said, from critical breaking news to fun food facts, Central Time is a vital and enjoyable part of our week. And Bob in Bailey's Harbor said, WPR is on in our house all day, and Central Time never fails to grab my attention. Thank you for your excellent coverage. Bob, John, Kirsty, thank you so much for your support. Rob, how can others join them?
Giving now online. It takes just a few minutes, by the way, at WPR.org, or you can call in at 888-202-2552. Join in on this first day of our fall membership drive. Get us off to a great start. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. In a speech at the National Archives yesterday, President Trump signed an executive order to create the 1776 Commission, a group meant to promote what he called patriotic history education. During his address, the president criticized the 1619 Project, a series published last year by the New York Times that examines the role slavery played in building America and its legacy today.
The 1619 Project and the crusade against American history is toxic propaganda, ideological poison that, if not removed, will dissolve the civic bonds that tie us together, will destroy our country.
So how should we teach American history? Just the good stuff or warts and all? Brett Barker is a professor of U.S. history and chair of the Department of History and International Studies at UW-Stevens Point. Brett, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Ron.
Well, what, first of all, was your reaction to the president's remarks yesterday?
Well, my initial reaction was that I think we need to have a conversation about what exactly patriotism and patriotic education is. I think his view, which is sounds like that patriotism flows from a view of the American past where one only looks at the positive, seems to me to be, in the end, a very fragile and shallow patriotism, because ultimately, you'll be disappointed when you find out that there was anything bad in the American past. I think knowing the past, knowing the good and the bad, is what really grows a deeper and more meaningful patriotism amongst American citizens.
It seems like there's two views of the role of teaching history, of the reason to teach history. One, and this is, I think, been in the forefront at some points in American history, maybe a lot of them, is the idea of teaching it is to instill a sense of patriotism. It's a civic boost in a way. And the other is, you know, trying to teach the facts of history and gain understanding of the past, hopefully to make better decisions in the present. Is that a fair way to break down those two approaches?
Those have always been in tension. That's right. I think that many of us, particularly in K-12, receive a lot of history mixed in with civics. And you're right, it is to gain an appreciation of the American system, which I think is fine. But understanding the American system deeply is knowing more than just positives.
We're talking to history professor Brett Barker from UW-Stevens Point about the role of teaching history, the president's call for a commission on patriotic education. You could join in, by the way, with your reactions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. How much should history education focus on the downsides of American history, slavery, the treatment of Native Americans, other things like that? Or is the role to create a positive image of the United States for students as they learn? Brett, when we look at what is taught, what do you make of our history curriculum? How does the balance fall between those two poles right now?
Well, I think when it's taught well, and the way it's taught, particularly when one moves towards high school and in college, I certainly think there's some topics at the elementary level that aren't really appropriate, age appropriate, But when you get a little further into curriculum, I think that the teachers and professors are trying really hard to draw that balance, not to simply emphasize either the positive or the negative, but to try to have a more rounded and nuanced view. And I think there's a reason for that. I think the reason is that many people who are consider themselves deeply patriotic would say that part of the project of a democracy is to not only celebrate what we've done well in the past, but to also challenge ourselves to do better. Lincoln, a century and a half ago, said, not only can we all do better, that is, can we continue to live up to the ideals that this nation was founded on? Can we make those a reality? And can we be critical about those times when we haven't and see if we can all do better?
When you put together one of your own syllabi, a syllabus for a course, I mean, obviously you can't teach everything. No matter what the topic is, there are things you put in, the things you leave out. How do you start to sift and winnow, as we say in Wisconsin, to get that balanced perspective?
Well, that's a great question. I think that everyone comes to it slightly differently. I think that I don't come to it with some ideological bent, which seems to be what the president is suggesting, but trying to create a complex view of American history as certainly includes great people. People who have taken my classes certainly know that folks like George Washington or Abraham Lincoln or Franklin Delano Roosevelt wander through my classes, but to also try to make history about everyone in the American past. And so that does include a lot of people in the diversity of the American population. And so both the successes and the trials that they've gone through, and to try to give that kind of more full portrait, which I think will give students not only a better understanding of the past, but maybe find elements of it that they can more easily relate to.
Is this idea, this politicization of how we teach history, new to 2020?
No, people have been debating since at least the late 19th century about the exact role of history in education and its purposes. And I think that people, there were people 100 years, 120 years ago, who were arguing the same things about the way history was being taught. And these same issues arise again and again, because in the end, history is contested terrain. There are certainly historical facts, but so much of history is trying to understand and interpret the past. And it is always a complicated thing that people are not always going to disagree on. But I think those disagreements can be helpful. I think that a healthy exchange and discussion about what the past is and what it means is at the heart of a healthy democracy.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Kathy is with us in Lac des Flambeaux. Kathy, hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
What did you want to tell us about, Kathy?
I am thinking that the current president, who I refer to as Cheeto, as in C-H-E-A-T-O, is trying to wipe out the history so that he looks better in the future. I'm currently reading a book. It is called From the Heart, Voices of the American Indian of Lee Miller. And it covers 250 Indian civilizations through testimony. And it's quite enlightening. And I wish that this had been taught in our schools back when. And it would help people just understand other minorities a whole lot better. And
Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate your sharing that. Brett, I think there's a lot of attention to how and what we teach about slavery right now. Kathy, bringing up another part of American history with obviously a lot of negative sides to it.
Well, and I think that the idea is not only, yes, certainly Native American history is an area of interest of mine. And not only is that a very difficult story, but if you're going to really consider history, American history as being the history of all of us, than the experience of Native peoples on this continent and the impact that the arrival of Europeans and the subsequent colonization of the United States had has to be part of that story. It shouldn't be the entire story, but it has to be included if you're going to give an honest portrayal of what the American past was and how we got to where we are today.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Steve now in Milwaukee. Steve, hi.
Good afternoon. Yeah, this... I'm a former history teacher myself, and, you know, I would see this during my career. And a lot of this has to do with how history has been taught for many years, I think. Textbooks are generally kind of awful, and they'll brush over significant things in our history in a paragraph or two. And they're written from the perspective often of, you know, those who conquered, those who won. And another issue is sometimes you're dealing with parents, and sometimes you have administrations without any backbone. And some people are looking for a history that's wrapped in the flag and are looking for more indoctrination than looking at the whole picture, as your guest is speaking about.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Brett?
Yeah, I would agree. I really admire what K-12 teachers have to do, because you're right. They have to consider the sensibilities of parents. And a lot of K-12 textbooks in particular, because they want to sell and they want to sell in many states, really often try to take out anything that could be controversial in order to increase sales and the palatability of their text. And frankly, what results is often a very sort of dull history of the United States and the American past, which I fear really turns off some students as a result.
Thanks a lot for that call. Some people, Brett, have pointed out an irony. The last time the phrase patriotic education was widely in the news, I think it was late last year, when China was insisting on a new kind of patriotic education in schools in Hong Kong to bring students into that. Is it fair to point out that that comparable phrase being used, that and the concerns that it can raise?
Well, I would go back to particularly the idea that what needs to be taught is pro-American history, which I'm not sure exactly what that would mean. But yes, that I think what we have to do is make sure that we're being honest about the past, and that we're not trying to use the past for any particular political viewpoint, left or right. I think that in the end, the past needs to be taken on its own terms. We need to understand it in a way, and not to use it as indoctrination in any way, which is very much what the Chinese were about there. And I think we have to be very careful that anything like that, nothing like that, ever gets near the American public education system.
Brett, while it may be controversial, are you glad when we have these moments where people are actually talking about history and how we talk about history?
I am, because I think, as I said earlier, I think these discussions are useful. I think that we all sometimes take for granted things that are taught and how they're taught. And I think that if we have a robust conversation as a people about what the American past is and what we can learn from it and how we can move forward and understand how we are in the present moment, we will be a healthier nation and a healthier democracy.
Brett, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thank you.
Brett Barker is a professor of U.S. history and chair of the Department of History and International Studies at UW-Stevens Point. He talked with us about teaching history after President Trump said yesterday he's putting together a commission to promote what he calls patriotic education. Coming up today at 6 here on the Ideas Network, from surprising signs on Venus to the signing of a deal in the Middle East, it's the weekly news roundup today on 1A+. That's 6 o'clock on the Ideas Network.